Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletown from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Maddie Boehner. Maddie is Senior Counsel in the Office of Counsel to the Inspector General at Health and Human Services. And we're going to be talking today about a special fraud alert that was recently issued on speaker programs. Maddie, what led the OIG's office to issue this alert?
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for having me, Adam. I'm happy to be here.
My pleasure.
So we occasionally issue special fraud alerts when we notice there are certain industry trends that are particularly concerning. In the past, we've issued them on inappropriate lab payments or telemarketing for DME suppliers, nursing home arrangements, things like that. So in this case, we're talking about speaker programs, which for background, they're just generally defined as manufacturer-sponsored events at which a healthcare professional or physician would speak to other healthcare professionals about the drug or device or even the disease state, and they would be doing that on behalf of the manufacturer. So I know we've gotten some questions about, you know, why now? Why are we issuing this special fraud alert now? Especially when speaker programs and the fraud related to them has been around for a bit. But there have been some high-profile, high-dollar settlements over the last few years, and we wanted to build on that momentum and make our position clear to the industry. So we've seen a lot of recurring themes in those cases. For example, many speaker programs have been held at entertainment or sports venues. We've seen them at high-end, expensive restaurants where there's just a ton of alcohol available. And we've also seen issues where a healthcare professional will get paid to speak and then they don't ever actually speak, or they'll be speaking to a couple of their buddies and those people don't have any professional reason to be listening to that content or receiving the meal or whatever the remuneration is from the speaker program. So some of those cases have resulted in criminal and civil resolutions. And we in the OIG have taken a number of different approaches to resolving that, just depending on the circumstances. A notable one is recently the Department of Justice has resolved a False Claims Act case with Novartis relating to its speaker program conduct. And that case resolved this summer for about $678 million. Wow. So in conjunction with that settlement, Novartis agreed to enter into what is called a corporate integrity agreement, or as we call them, CIAs. And in that CIA, they agreed to specific limitations on the way that they will conduct their future speaker programs. Some of the notable provisions in the CIA are they will be limiting the number and the timing of those programs, and they've agreed to limit the amount of payment that physicians can receive as a speaker. And they also agreed that any speaker program that would be given by non-Novartis employees, so this would be like the contract physician, basically any physician that works somewhere else that's not Novartis, they agreed that speaker programs for those can't be held in person. So if they are occurring, they have to be virtual. Although the case was resolved in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, during which virtual programs are becoming commonplace and everybody else has moved virtual, the speaker program limitations that were negotiated for that CIA came before COVID happened. So the pandemic just provides a unique opportunity to test the new limitations on in-person activities while the rest of the world was also learning to go virtual. So basically, after that case settled, we felt it was important to clarify that our concerns aren't isolated to one or two egregious cases. They're much broader. We think it's time for the industry to reassess and make changes to a practice that can have significant compliance risks. The time to reassess and change is especially ripe in light of the current pandemic circumstances that we all find ourselves in. It's a real opportunity for the industry to make meaningful changes in their practices and reconsider how to best provide information about their products in the 21st century.
So it is interesting how this pandemic is having all kinds of interesting effects, including this one that's interrupting what were long, you know, held processes. Now, how should pharma and medical device manufacturers rethink their compliance efforts in light of the special fraud alert?
So the special fraud alert describes certain suspect characteristics that OIG finds especially concerning. We would say that manufacturers should definitely consider that list when analyzing their own speaker program practices. And while the alert doesn't provide specific compliance recommendations, we think any good compliance department should review the list of characteristics and consider if they need to make or update any policies to be more in line with those concerns. And it can also be a tool for monitoring ongoing speaker program conduct for the future. So I think another thought here is the alert could help compliance professionals in the sense of it provides a concrete example of problematic conduct that they could then use as a reference when having internal discussions with other business units. We've seen in our work that not every business unit is necessarily focused as much as they should be on compliance. And so I know the battle between what works from a compliance or revenue perspective can be challenging. They could use this other way to justify updating existing policies and practices so that they are ensuring compliance over other, you know, concerns.
Okay. Now, in addition to what the pharma and medical device manufacturers should be doing, what about on the recipient side? First, what should physicians be doing or more accurately not doing?
Yeah, so as people probably know, the anti-kickback statute applies to all parties of an improper referral arrangement. Healthcare professionals are equally responsible for ensuring that the things that they're doing are appropriate. They don't get a pass for being on the receiving end of illegal remuneration. So we've issued a good bit of guidance over the years to help healthcare professionals spot and avoid problematic activities. One example is the OIG roadmap for new physicians, which warns about inappropriate consultant and speaking arrangements. They can also consider whether or not the speaker programs that they're attending actually exhibit the suspect characteristics that we've described. And if they are exhibiting those, maybe they should consider whether they should be participating in them. I think another thing they can do is ask, is the compensation that they're receiving as a speaker or the remuneration that they're receiving as an attendee at a speaker program based on their ability to prescribe or order the product that's being promoted? And if the answer to that question is yes, then they should consider whether they should avoid the arrangement entirely.
Interesting. I keep thinking of that old phrase, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And
exactly.
In many ways, this is a reminder of that. Now, what about the hospitals and healthcare systems that employ physicians? What should be done on their end?
I think that's a really interesting question. Because the special fraud alert wasn't written or intended necessarily for hospitals and health systems, but to the extent that they employ or even contract with physicians who do speaker programs, I think from a compliance perspective, they might want to understand more about those arrangements. I know some hospitals and health systems already have restrictions in place on what interactions they allow physicians to have with manufacturers. But if they don't have those policies, then maybe they want to consider whether they should. I think overall, our big concern here with speaker programs is the undue influence of a healthcare professional's decision making. So for hospitals and health systems that are equally concerned about that kind of a thing, they could be using the open payments data that's available online to see what their physicians are receiving from manufacturers and, you know, the nature of the payments that they're getting. I know a lot of places probably already require that, but again, it's a good resource just to cross-check, make sure that your physicians are, who they're interacting with and what the purpose of those interactions are. I think that's especially important for places that have physicians receiving any kind of remuneration from a manufacturer, and those physicians are also maybe on some kind of a medical board that makes the decisions over what products to use in the hospital.
That's a good warning sign. Are there any other red flags that all sides should be looking for?
I think this really just comes back to the suspect characteristics that we've identified. I would say that those are all definitely red flags that everybody should be looking for. Of course, just because one or more characteristics is present, it doesn't automatically mean that the speaker program violates the anti-kickback statute. But I do think it means that everybody involved should seriously consider why the program is occurring and why the remuneration is being exchanged. The more suspect characteristics that a program exhibits, the more it's going to appear like a reward or an inducement for referrals. There are also plenty of settled cases that provide examples of potential conduct to avoid. So if the goal of a speaker program is truly education, then that should be apparent from the way the program is conducted. If you go back and you look at many of the speaker program related cases that the government has settled over the years, you can see that education was often not the focus, and companies paid a heavy price for that.
Well, you already brought up a great example of a very heavy price that was paid just recently. So now, any final thoughts to wrap up before we go?
Yeah. I think for compliance professionals who are looking for ways to improve their company's practices, I would recommend, as a first step, take a hard look at the characteristics that we've identified in the alert. I would also encourage them to take that alert into their organization and discuss it with others and try to consider whether they need to update any existing policies and practices that could be addressed as risks in the special fraud alert. Another good place to look would be our recent CIAs. Obviously, CIAs are only binding on the parties who are entering into them, but they are helpful illustrations about what OIG's current thinking is on best practices. And I think as a last thought, the restrictions on in-person activity during this pandemic have provided that rare opportunity to stop and reassess practices that until this year have been pretty much considered the norm. I think we would encourage everybody to think about whether the benefits outweigh the risks of speaker programs in a post-pandemic world. If you believe they do, think about how you might change your speaker program to address the concerns that were highlighted in the alert. And if you think that the risks are too high, consider moving to virtual programs or even eliminating speaker programs just entirely.
Well, the pandemic, as we've all seen, is a time of reassessing a lot of ways business gets done. And it seems as if this is one more area to very much add to the list. Well, Maddie, thank you so much for taking the time to take us through the alert and what its implications are. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and ATCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.